this prayer there. And that was this idea that God has something for all of us to do. Every one of us. Now I know, and Amanda knows, and anyone who's honest in this room knows, that in a theater this size with this many folks in it, there are some who are very sure about following Jesus on the one hand, and then others who are just beginning maybe their walk of faith, or maybe aren't even sure that they really believe in this stuff. And if you are either there or here, it's good that you're here this morning. And I would say it's also true what Amanda said in her prayer, and that is that each one of us was meant to do something very good and useful for God in the world. I believe that entirely, and I hope that this morning, the time we spend together, will make that a little more plain to you and to me and to us as a group. That's my hope for this morning. Now, before we get into what I'm going to talk about this morning, a few things. First, I recognize that there are some new faces here. I want to introduce myself. My name is Christian, and I'm one of the people who is a part of this community, Outreach Red Bank. And to all of those who are here for the first time or visiting, just want to say welcome, and we're really glad that you chose to be here this morning. You're always welcome at the Clearview Cinema, whether it's now or whenever, and I want to say that. I'm glad that you're here and with us in worship this morning. I see some faces that I haven't seen for a while. I want to say to you also, great to see you. It's always wonderful when old friends are around again, and that makes us glad. One more thing before we get into the sermon for this morning. Those of you who have been here regularly know that I've been talking about a series of sermons that I've been getting ready for that I'm actually really excited about. And it's going to be called Images of God in the Stories Jesus Told. Now, I'm not going to do this morning or even next week, but it will begin the week after that. I just wanted to put it before the congregation again because I'm actually very excited about this series, both for those of us who are really wanting to follow God and understand Him well, and for those people who maybe aren't sure about who God is. Because this series that I'm going to be starting in 2 weeks will really take one week after another a serious look at the stories that Jesus told. They're called parables, and the ways in which He pictures God in those stories. And we'll look at those together to learn more clearly who God is and then who we are in light of that. All right, so I just wanted to put that before us, and now I want you to get that out of your mind. And I want to tell us what we're going to do this morning. On Wednesday, Tuesday, I was meeting with Jared in my office. Jared is the guy who coordinates our high school ministry. And I was telling him that I wasn't going to start the series on parables just yet and hadn't picked out something to preach about on Sunday. And his suggestion for me was simple. He said, how about setting before the church again a picture of where Orb is as a church and what our mission is? And I thought, you know, at first, I wasn't sure, but I thought about it as the week went along, and I thought, this is a fantastic idea, and this is why. You heard in Amanda's prayer that she said, tonight, several times, right? Don't worry, Amanda, everybody's been doing that. Have you others noticed that? Yes. It looks like nighttime in here. It's still daytime. The reason this is happening is simple. Because Orb as a church is in the midst of a very significant transition. For 4 or 5 years, we met every Sunday in the evening for worship, and now we meet in the morning. For years, we met in the upstairs or in the sanctuary of a church over there, and now we meet in the Clearview Cinemas. For years, when you went into the church building, you were in a church building. Now, if you're a parent, you have to argue with your kids about whether they can have junior mints during church. It's a big transition. We've gone from a church building to a theater. There's other things. In a theater, usually you just sit and you're quiet and you want to be private, right? In a church, you ought to be connected with the people around you. Has anyone else felt that in this theater? It feels a little bit like we're kind of closed in and we're not able really to be together as a church. Anybody else feel that? I feel that sometimes. All of these represent big changes. There's other changes too. There are some new faces who have come on Sunday morning. I think that's fantastic. There are changes for our midweek ministries, our high school group, our young adult group, and our middle school group. Now they meet, instead of in a basement, they meet at a daycare center. Those are big changes for those of you who have been there. I say all of this because when a church goes through a time of change, if it's a significant time of change, it will face the temptation to lose sight of what it's all about. And so this morning, I want to set before us as a group a simple story in which Jesus is putting before the disciples a picture of what it should all be about. The story that we're going to look at happens after Jesus died and rose again. And in all of the resurrection accounts, you'll see this in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, when the risen Jesus meets the disciples, very frequently, he's giving them this directions or guidance about what their mission is, what their task is in the world. Now, I want to look at this together with you this morning, not just to see what Jesus said then to the disciples, but because I believe this is true, that any one of us here today, insofar as we want to be a disciple of Christ's, insofar as we want to follow him, we also should listen to what he has to say about what our task is in the world. Now, some of you in this room are very clear this morning that you have a task in the world in following Jesus. I think of the people who coordinate our high school ministry, our young adult ministry, our middle school group. I think of Mike Oliver and those who are involved in adult ministry and Midweek Oasis and all of the ministries that happen outside of this church time in the morning. All of you know that you have a task in the world. The story we're going to look at will help you see more clearly what that is. Now, for those of you who aren't involved in any of those things, whether you're a visitor who's not really sure what you think about Christianity, or you've come from another church and you're just checking it out, or whoever you are, Jesus also has a task for you, a mission for you in life. And this is true of all people, whether they see it or not. I think one of the goals of becoming a mature disciple is understanding what his calling is to you. Now, we're going to look at a story together that gives us some insight into the mission that Christ has for us. Now, I won't tell you exactly what you're supposed to do with your life, what job you're supposed to take or so on, but what it will show us is three things in general that I believe will be helpful. And here's what they are. The first is the how of mission. The second is the who of mission. And then the third is the what of mission. All right? Now's where I want you to grab your Bible. And if you brought one, open up to John 21. If you have one of these right here, the ones that were on the Bible cart when you came in, you'll find John chapter 21 on page 883. And we're going to look at the story that is recorded in the 21st chapter of John. And we're going to read this together. There's going to be a blinding light maybe that'll come on in the back. Could that be turned on? I know it's a little tough to read in here, but if someone who knows how to turn that light on would do that, that'd be great. And if not, we'll make do. We're going to first look at the how. Find John chapter 21, and you'll see there in verse 1, once this light comes on. Yes. And if you can't see it because of the shadows, just hold it up. You'll see there in John chapter 21, the title that we have there is Jesus Appears to Seven Disciples, and I'm going to set the stage for you very briefly before we read it. This scene takes place with a group of guys who are fishing and Jesus appearing to them on the shore. All right, let's look at what it says. And if you can't find your Bible and find your way there, you can always look up here. Let's read together. After these things, Jesus showed himself again to the disciples by the Sea of Tiberias. And he showed himself in this way. Gathered together were Simon Peter, Thomas, called the twin, Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two others of his disciples. Simon Peter said to them, I am going fishing. They said to him, we will go with you. They went out and got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. Well, I want to stop there. The group of men that we meet in the beginning of this story, some of them we've met before in the fishing world, Peter and the two sons of Zebedee, we met them early on in the Gospel of Matthew. We read about them as men who are professional fishermen. You may recall that Jesus met them when they were fishing. The very first time that they met Jesus, they were fishing like this. We meet them again after Jesus has died, and they're at the Sea of Tiberias. This is another name for the Sea of Galilee. And Peter initiates with a group of his friends, all of whom were at one time followers of Jesus. He initiates with them a fishing trip. Now, those who know Palestinian fishing say that the best time to catch fish is at night. This story opens with Peter suggesting to his friends that he's going fishing. Now, if you're familiar with what happened in John, you know that he had recently experienced a great disappointment. He had put his hope in Jesus, and he, Peter, failed Jesus, and then he thought Jesus failed him. And we can imagine that perhaps he's having one of those moments where he's not sure that following Jesus was the right choice, and so he decides to go back to fishing. Incidentally, if you are a follower of Jesus, Whether you're just starting out, you're in high school, you've been getting to know him in the high school ministry, or maybe you're a person who has been following him for a long time, all of us will experience days where it seems like maybe Jesus has failed. This was one of those days for Peter, and so he went back to fishing. Now, I want you to notice something. It's the last line here. This group of men went out on the open waters, and they fished all night, but they caught nothing. Now, I want to point this out. This group of men included seven disciples. I've sort of highlighted them. Simon Peter is one who we know. Thomas, Nathanael, the sons of Zebedee, there's two of them, James and John, and then two others. That's seven guys. Now, I want you to picture this. This is simple. We have seven guys, all of whom were followers of Jesus at one time, out on the open waters fishing together. They work all night, and they don't catch anything. Now, at least four of these, or three of these at least, were professional fishermen. They knew, if anyone knew, how to catch fish. And even with all of their experience, and even with the whole night behind them, and all of their expertise, they caught nothing. Now, there's a reason, I would say, that this story is meaning to teach us why they didn't catch anything. Those seven men are all together, and who's not with them? Who's not with them who all along had been with them whenever they were working together to do something? Does anybody know? Jesus. They worked all night, trying their best to do their tasks together, and they caught nothing, and Jesus wasn't there. Now, I want a little aside for a moment. Does anybody remember what Jesus told Peter that he would be doing when he first met him? When Jesus first met Peter, he said, "You catch fish, but I'm going to teach you to do something else." Does anybody remember what he told him? "I'm going to make you fishers of men." Now, he meant by that, "I'm going to teach you to reach out for and gather up people in the same way you gather up fish." Think again for a moment. All night long, these guys are working at fishing, and they catch nothing. Watch what happens next. This is verse 4. "Just after daybreak, Jesus stood on the beach, but the disciples did not know that it was Jesus. Jesus said to them, 'Children, have you no fish, have you?' They answered him, 'No.' He said to them, 'Cast the net to the right side of the boat, and you will find some.' So they cast it, and now they were not able to haul it in because there were so many fish." Now, this is simple. All night long, they work together without Jesus at a common task, catching fish. They catch nothing. In the morning, Jesus arrives, he tells them what to do, and they have so many fish that they can't haul the net in. And here is where I see the first lesson for us as a church and for all of us as individuals who would seek to follow Jesus. And it's a lesson about the how of mission. Now, let me pause for a moment and say what some of the missions that we might be called to are like. One would be reaching out to high school students who don't know Jesus to try to help them see him. This is what the high school ministry does. Or the same thing with middle school students, to create a space where a middle school student can be him or herself and get to know God around friends. Isn't that a great vision? That's what Juan's and his leadership team's vision is for middle school group. Or for the college group, it is to really grow genuine disciples who, as they're beginning to make life decisions, you young adults, would really start making the right ones, following God. And so on. We have the same sort of vision for adult ministry and for Midweek Oasis. And that's what the mission is. Now, this story teaches us something about how all of you who are in those sorts of ministries can expect to succeed. Do you see it? Yes or no? Yeah? If you are gathered together as a group and you have all the expertise in the world, you know everything to do, but Jesus isn't with you doing it, failure. And on the other hand, if he is there, success. Now, I want to add this. Those are not the only ways that a person is called to ministry. Some of you in here who are mothers are called to be good stewards of this child that you hold in your arms and you tuck in at night and you wake up in the morning. And it seems monotonous and tedious day after day. This is a calling for you. And the thing is, you would succeed in this mission, which is a good mission that God gives, so long as Jesus is there with you, accompanying you, and commanding you to cast the net on the other side. And if you listen to him, you'll succeed in it. The same goes for families who are trying to raise godly children, for people who are trying to go out and feed those who are hungry, who are needy. or those who are working really hard at developing relationships with strangers in the town so that they can begin to maybe make some relational ties that would lead to growth in discipleship. The first lesson, very simply, is if we want to know how to do mission in the way that God means us to, whatever our mission is, with Jesus' presence and guidance is the answer. That's the first thing. And I got a great verse here for you. For those of you who are note scribblers, and I see some of you, write this one down. Earlier on in the same book of John, Jesus actually told the disciples this. He said, apart from me, you can do nothing. And at this point in our life as a church, Orb, it should be said again, and that's why I'm saying it this morning, to all of us, that in adult ministries, in Sunday ministry, in a group like this, in the music, in everything that this church does here on Sunday, and everything that happens outside of this group, we should remember that apart from Jesus, none of the things we do will really amount to anything. But with him, they will. So that means when you go out to feed a hungry person or to take care of a family that's alone or do any one of the many things that you do in mission in this church, you should begin by asking Jesus to be there. And then, as a group, working hard to listen to him. And you know you can do this. You can do this as a mom, as a family, as a couple trying to learn how to be in relationship to each other. You can listen to Jesus and he'll guide you. And we can all do this. That's the first lesson for us this morning. The how of mission is that with Jesus' presence and guidance, we will do what we're meant to do. All right. That's the first point. You see the way the point then shifts? Did you get that? I did that on purpose. All right, the who. This is the next thing I want to set before us. Let me ask you this. Has anyone ever been in a community of faith, or maybe even in this church, and felt like, you know, that group really is for only a very narrow sort of person? Have you ever experienced that? Maybe just for these sorts of people. And maybe you yourself have wondered over time, who is the mission? Okay, so if Christian is saying that we should go with Jesus to do the mission that we're supposed to do, who's it for? Now, I want to tell you this. The earliest disciples, the very ones who are in this story, they often wondered about who the mission was for. Maybe you know this because you've read through the New Testament carefully, and you know there was a question about whether Jesus was just for people of Israel, just for the Jews, or maybe also for the Gentiles, the Goyim, the nations. This is one of the questions that's very important in the New Testament. There are others as well. Maybe you remember there's a point where the disciples come to a Samaritan village and they don't accept Jesus, and so they want to rain fire down on that village. And Jesus says, no, no, no. I'm not a fire brand for some ethnicities and then a friend to others. This is for everyone. And so the question of who was alive for the disciples then as it ought to be for us. Let's look at the story because this is what happens next. After they catch the fish, one of the people in the boat there says to Peter, hey, that's Jesus on the beach. Peter gets so excited, he ties his robe on, jumps into the water, and starts to swim for shore. The boat, they finally get the fish in, they row to the beach, and then they all arrive on the shore, and this is what happens. I want you to read it along, either up here or down here. It's in verse 9. Here's what happens. When they had gone ashore, they saw a charcoal fire there with fish on it and bread. Jesus said to them, bring some of the fish that you have just caught. So Simon Peter went aboard and hauled the net ashore, full of large fish, 153 of them. And though there were so many, the net was not torn. Now I want to stop there, and I want to show you, look up here for just a moment, one of the details that has become the most intriguing to interpreters through time in this story is that detail right there. 153 fish were caught. Now, maybe you know this. Ancient people, back in the first century, as they were dealing with texts like this, they were almost always intrigued by numbers. And John, the man who wrote this gospel, often uses numbers symbolically. Now, when people began to scratch their heads over this number, 153, there were a group of folks who said, this number simply means that they caught 153 fish. That is to say, after they had this miraculous catch and Peter jumped into the water, swam and dragged the net up, before they sat down and talked with Jesus, they took the time to count the fish one by one. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I do not think this is why that number is there. Does it seem likely to you that somebody would start counting before getting on with this glorious reunion? No. There's other reasons to think that this is symbolic. Another reason is when John merely means to convey a large number, he'll use the words about, and then he would have said 150. But here, he says 153. Now, early on in the history of the church, there were many people who wanted to understand, what does this 153 mean? They had this sense that John was trying to teach them something in this number, and I think they're right. And so interpreters began to wonder, what is the 153? Now, I want to just bring you back for a moment to where we are in this message. I said that this second lesson is the lesson about the who of mission. 153, what does it mean? All right, I got some pictures here, all right? Some good ones. You know, anybody know? Origin of Alexandria. Anybody know Origin? Some of you? That's not a real photo, you know. I'm trying to get us to loosen up here, all right? Origen, one of the first guys who wrote commentaries very early on in the history of the church. He looked at this number, 153, and he thought about it like this. And then he said, this is what it means. We have the number 50 times 3. What does that equal? Right? And 150 plus 3 equals 153. So we have 3 50s plus 3. Do you know what this is about, this story, he says? The Trinity. The Blessed Trinity. That's what the number is conveying, something about the Trinity. All right, let me show you some other, before we make our judgments, let's look at some others. That is Cyril. Another ancient commentator on Scripture, he also looked at the number 153. He also wondered, what could this be? He also did this, and then he said, 153 composed of the number 100, the number 50, and the number 3. He said, the number 100, that represents the number of Jews to whom these first disciples were being directed to go to by Jesus. The number 50 represents the number of Gentiles to whom they were meant to go by Jesus. I like this a little better, because I'll tell you why. Jesus is always directing disciples to go out to people. And so Cyril said 100 is for the number of Jews, 50 is for the number of heathen. And then he thought, what's the 3 for? And guess what he said? The Trinity. Also, the Trinity. All right. Then we meet, boom. This guy was even older. They didn't have color at this point. I'm kidding. This is not older. This is Augustine or Augustine. Augustine was the first to recognize that there was something deeper going on in this number. And he partly did this because he was a whiz at mathematics. Do we have any mathematical whizzes here? Anyone? Just one? All right. He noticed this. Take a look at this. He noticed that the number 153 is the sum of all of the natural numbers, 17, 16, 15, all the way up. That if you add all those numbers up, this is like an eye exam for the people in the back. If you add them all up, you get 153. 17 is a prime number. 2 to the n plus 1 equals 17 when n is 4. This is a very, very interesting sequence of numbers. And all the way back then, the ancient Greeks understood this. And it was a really, really fascinating thing when Augustine discovered this fact. Here's what he did with the fact. He said, if you put 17 dots on the bottom of a page, and then on top of that, you put 16, and then 15, and then 14, and 13, and 12, and 11, all the way up, you have how many dots? Somebody help me out here.
153.
Right, even though the one's off the top of the screen. And if you, what do you have when you take the numbers away? Look at what you have there. Do you see what yes, what kind of triangle do you have there? Right, which means it has three of the same what? Sides, and also? Angles, three of the same. And what we have, he said, is the Trinity again. Now, I want to ask you a question. Simple question. If you were writing a story, like John was putting a story together, and you wanted to capture symbolically something about the Trinity, and the way you were going to do that, the vehicle for this symbol, was a catch of fish, let me ask you something. Would you have your fishermen catch 153 fish or this many fish? Right? Personally, this is what I came up. If I was writing the story and that was my aim, this is what I would have done. One fish with three heads. Now, I'll tell you what. I think the Trinity is extraordinarily important. I think it is extraordinarily important. I do not believe that is what John is meaning to convey. And here's why I don't believe it. This is something else I came across. This is a man named Jerome. one of the great intellectuals of the earlier centuries, who worked so hard at learning. And this man wrote a commentary on the book of Ezekiel. That's another book in the Bible which talks about rivers. And in this book, in Ezekiel, there's an image of this beautiful river that flows and it waters the valleys, and there's trees of life that are growing along the banks of this beautiful river. And all along the banks of the river, there are fishermen. Does anybody else know this vision from Ezekiel? I think it's 47. And these fishermen are catching all these fish. And in that commentary, this is what this guy Jerome says. He says, any one of us who's read the ancient poet, and I want to get his name right here. His name is Oppianus Silex. This is a poet, a Greek poet, who also happened to be a zoologist. And what Jerome said is, anyone who's read his Haliotica, I can't even say it. I didn't read it, I can't even say it. Haliotica. This is his book. Do you know what it says in that book about how many fish there are in the world? How many varieties of fish there are? 153. That means when this story was written, when the first disciples were reading about what happened on the morning that Jesus told the disciples what to do to catch fish, and they all knew that symbolized reaching out to people, this means that on that, when that happened, the number of fish they caught was the same as the number of species of fish that were known to exist in the world at the time. Now, do you hear what John is trying to teach us about who the mission is for? Do you hear it? It's everybody. And every species of fish, every kind of person there is. That's the answer. And I think this is an absolutely beautiful and fantastic answer for all of us who are wondering, who are we supposed to be going out to? If it's true that we can listen to Jesus and he'll teach us to go out to people and he'll be with us, that's the how of mission. If it's true, well then who are we supposed to go out with? Well, every kind of person. Now, I want to say a few specific things. That means young people, children, and old people. There are some churches that are very narrow, only people of this age. No, it means well-dressed people and poorly dressed people. It means people with good manners, who have good morals, and speak well, and understand who God is. And it also means people who are foul-mouthed, dirty, and disgusting, and who have no honor or dignity in the way they carry themselves, and no respect for anybody. And this means that all of those different varieties of fish are the varieties that Jesus means us to go out to. Every variety. So that would mean, if this becomes a school of fish that doesn't welcome certain sorts of fish, then we're in trouble. And that's an important thing for us to bear in mind at this point in our history as a church, as Orb, that we better not look down on any sort of fish just because it's different than the kind we are, because if we will, then we'll be denying the Master, Jesus, who taught the disciples that they should be going after every kind of fish. All right, you got that? We got the how, is with Jesus in his presence, the who, all kinds of people, and it's time to what? Is that pretty corny when I did that thing? If you had told me, Christian, someday you'll be standing on a movie theater stage twirling around as you're preaching, I would not believe it. No way. All right, maybe I would. The what? This is the last question. The what? Okay, fine. So with Jesus' help, we're called to go out to every kind of person. What are we supposed to do? Is there anything in particular that will guide us if we're asking this question? Well, is there one thing that in all of these different species, we're really meant to be doing with them? Is there? I mean, we've got some variety here in our group. We've got ministry with children going on now, and then ministry in Midweek Oasis with people who have grown children. And then we have everything in between. And some of our groups are like this, where there's lots of clear talking about the Bible. And sometimes, maybe there's ministry going on where there's people just hanging out after Tuesday night at the Dublin House, drinking beer with people who've never been to church. And so the question I want to put here is, well, is there something that ties it all together? Is there one thing that sort of can say, here's what all of the reaching out should be about? Yes, there is something. Now I want you to look one more time at the verses here, 9 and following, and I'll read them again. And now pay attention to the what. When they had gone ashore, they saw a charcoal fire there with fish on it and bread. Now, I want to stop there and point this out. If you thought, well, they caught all the fish to eat. There was a fire on the beach and they were going to come and cook the fish. First of all, I would not say that was a wise guide for what to do with the people that you reach out to. Okay? And then second of all, I would point out that there's already fish on the fire. Do you see that? They didn't catch the breakfast they were going to eat. There was already fish there. Now watch what Jesus says. Jesus said to them, Jesus said to them, bring some of the fish that you have just caught. So Simon Peter went aboard and hauled the net ashore. Now look at this. I've got this highlighted because I think it's here. Peter hauled the net ashore. Do you know where he brought the net full of fish? He brought it to Jesus. I think this point is so simple, it doesn't need any illustration. The what of mission is to gather people up so that they can be placed in the presence of Jesus. Anything that any one of us does in hopes of following after Jesus and doing the things that he means us to do should be like this. Bringing people into the place where they are close to Jesus. Notice this, please. Not, first of all, bringing them into the place where they're close to us. Not, first of all, trying ourselves to change that other person into something that we want them to be. Not, first of all, ourselves trying to convince them of one thing or another, but very simply bringing that person into the presence of Jesus. Whether this person is in middle school or has adult children, whether they're a college student or a high school student, all of you who work with groups like that should understand very clearly that what the sum of your work is, if you are going to be about the mission that Jesus gave his disciples, it would be simply to do what I can to bring this person into the presence of Jesus. And you can do that. Can you do it by yourself? No. The story taught us in the beginning. The only way to do that is with Jesus and with his guidance. And so if you're baffled and don't know how to do that, then you sit down and pray and say, Jesus, I would like this person that I'm trying to reach out to, this species of fish, to come close to you. Would you show me how to do it? And maybe the only answer you'll get is be a good friend to them, be loving to them. But please understand this, that your friendship and your love should be, in your mind, the instrument that God would use to bring that person close to Jesus. Same goes with those of us who are raising children. Your goal should not be to raise children who are happy or are successful in their careers, although both of those things might be good, but rather raise children who are close to Jesus. And again, can you do that on your own? Absolutely not. You can ask Jesus to guide you in that, and he will. And same with all of us who will be following him into the missions that he gives us. Now, I want to close with this thought. It's very simple. I believe that there is nothing better for any person than to be close to Jesus. I believe that for those of the people who we might reach out to well and bring into his presence, I also believe it for all of us who would seek to be people who lead people into Jesus' presence. The reason that Jesus wanted those fish and why he wanted those disciples to go out into the world and to catch fish and to bring them to him was because Jesus wants to change those people who are close to him with his love and his grace and his compassion and his judgment, which always seeks to be merciful and to remake us into the people we were meant to be. That is what you were made for, to be close to Jesus, and all of you were made also to be people who bring others close to him, because that's what the world was meant for, to be a world that is close to Jesus. And so the very simple answer to the what of mission is this, to bring people to Jesus. Now, I want to close with this one other thought. When you begin to become a person who's open with others about the fact that you're a Christian and that you would like to see them get to know God and Christ, you know what you're going to find out? If that person that you're trying to teach and lead is an honest person, you're going to find out that you know less about God than you thought you did. Has anyone ever experienced that? You start talking to someone who's not a believer about Christ and they start asking these great questions and you're totally stunned. Has anyone experienced that? It happens every single time. Every single time a person tries to begin sharing about Christ with another, they realize that, gosh, I don't know as much as I thought I did. And I'll tell you, it's okay to admit that, but my task with you, and this is why I'm doing this series on images of God in the stories that Jesus told, is to help you understand God better yourself, for you and for the people that you will share him with. And that is something that we can all grow in. That, just like everything else, we will only do with Jesus' help. And so I want to finish now by simply asking you to pray with me, asking for Jesus' help in the ways that we need help in order to be the people he means for us to be. Let's pray together.